This is an interview with Jason Moore Jr. for the Youngstown State University Oral History Department on the Depression by Cynthia Marsh at 4706 Nelson Mosier Road on October 4th, 1995 at approximately 7 o'clock p.m. Can you give me some background on where you were born and your parents?
I was born in Warren, Ohio on January 25th, 1917, just before American entry into World War I. My father was a merchant, had a general store in Warren, Ohio on the west side, and my mother was a housewife. Having been, prior to her marriage, she was an employee of her father, who published a small newspaper in Niles, Ohio. She was one of the two reporters that gathered the daily news throughout Niles for the daily publication of the paper called the Niles News.
Can you give me a little information about your father's store? Approximately how big was it and what it sold in general?
My father's store was located at the corner of Todd and Market in Warren, and it was an old building. Even at the time my grandfather had started the business, it was probably 40 feet in depth and 30 feet in breadth, and consisted of only one floor. It had a soda fountain and tables covered with newspapers for sale, and shelves on which there was groceries and tobacco products and clothing and all sorts of things that a general store would sell.
Did your father sell a lot of produce, or was it mainly canned goods?
He sold no produce, but he did have some barrels of things like pickles and things like that, which he would sell from a gross depository. And he had a lot of ice cream sales. He had a nice soda fountain where they made milkshakes and sodas and sundaes, and he sold Eskimo pies and things of that nature, including ice cream drumsticks and ice cream by the pint and quart. In the beginning, it was all hand packed. Later on, it was all came packed in quarts and pint containers.
About how much did it cost for, say, one scoop of ice cream?
One scoop of ice cream was 5 cents in a cone. And two scoops of ice cream in a cone was 10 cents.
Did you ever work in your father's store?
I worked some in my father's store, but I mostly goofed off because I didn't like to work in the store. I was too busy playing baseball, football, things like that.
What is your fondest memory of the store?
Fondest memory of the store? Oh. Well, it was a very friendly place all the time. People came and gathered there. In the evenings, they would sit around the coal stove in the back of the store and discuss the topics of the day, such as the state of the country and the state of the economy and the advent of communism into the problem of the country, and the upheaval caused by different groups in contention as to their economic power in the country. This included the unions and the businesses and the banks and the industry of the town. All of this was discussed, and the topics in the newspaper were a very common thing to bring into the discussion. One of the things that had a lot of discussion was what was called technocracy, which was a method of economy, how the economy would be run in the country. And it had such provisions as a specie being used for medium exchange instead of currency as we know it. And the specie would be determined by work units. And, that would be what counted in what you had money to spend. Of course, that was very very much subject to ridicule and dispute, and it never got off the ground, but it was very popular in the days of the Depression.
Was it popular, do you think, to the community of Warren or the United States in general?
It became unimportant to the country because nothing was ever done about it, but it was something that captured the imagination of a lot of people who were suffering in the economy.
Do you think it captured people in the unions more so than people who worked in, say, corporate businesses?
No, it was important to all the people. It was a communal sort of thing, and it captured the imagination of a lot of people who were not very sound in their knowledge of economics.
While your father was running the store, did your mother have an influence in the store, or did she just, like you said, stay at home and take care of the house?
My mother took care of the house, but she also did quite a bit of work in regard to the store. She washed all of the laundry that came out of the store, which was the jackets that my father would wear behind the soda fountain, and the dish towels and so on. And she and my father would make the chocolate syrup to go on the sundaes and into the sodas. And it was made from bars of solid chocolate, which were cut up and boiled in a big kettle. And after it was all made into a syrup and was poured into jars and taken to the store for dispensing at the soda fountain. And my mother worked every evening while I was growing up. I was home alone doing my homework, and my mother was at the store working with my father at the counter. At the counters, we had a lot of business in the evening because most of the stores had closed 5 or 6 o'clock, and they were open until 11 o'clock every night. My mother would go home before my dad. She would go home about 9:30, and my dad would close the store about 11 o'clock, hoping he was not being held up by robbers who would come in and point a pearl-handled pistol at him and demand the money at the cash register, which he gave him. And some of them who held him up, he recognized. And when they were arrested later, they greeted him by his name. Hi, Jason. It was one of those things.
So he had been held up before?
Oh yeah, he was held up quite a few times by punks who came in, and he got what little was left in the register each day. The daily total intake was probably between $50 and $100 for the whole day's sales.
Did your father try to correct this problem after it had happened say the first few times? Did he start putting the money in a safe after a certain hour?
No, he didn't have a safe, and he didn't worry about it because there was not that much involved. And he always carried the proceeds home with him every night, and money was stored at home until they made a bank deposit.
During the Depression, how did the store do?
Well, before the Depression, it was did a very good going business. But there had been some competition coming along. Other stores across the street opened up in competition with him, which took some of his trade. And he kept an accounts receivable in little notebooks were the size of probably 3x4, and you'd have a different page for each customer who wanted to run a bill. Those customers would run a bill, he would write down what they purchased, how much it was, and the date. And at the end of their pay period, they would come in and pay their bill. Of course, there were small amounts, and he frequently got beat out by the customer who would run up a bill and then stop coming in to see him. They'd go to the competition. So he had to write them off as bad debts. But he was very friendly with everybody, and the whole neighborhood liked him. And, even today, I have people my age or younger who would talk about going in the store and how they liked my dad and how they liked him. He always had a smile and was friendly to everybody. It was a good neighborhood store.
So during the Depression, you feel that the store still thrived?
Well, the store didn't thrive. It just barely got along because there wasn't much money for people to spend because they weren't working. What money they did have, they could spend only for essentials. But of course, he sold essentials. He sold groceries and lots of bread and canned goods. And any time a customer would come in the store and ask for something, my dad would go to the counter, go to the shelf, pull off the merchandise and put it in on top of the ice cream case. And when it was all done, he would put it in a sack for them and add it up. But he picked everything up. It's not like today where you go and pick the things off the shelf yourself. Mm-hmm. He went all over the store picking things up for the customer, took them to the central spot, and they added them up.
That's interesting. What did you think about the Depression in general?
Well, it was pretty tough. There was no money for unnecessary things. Just the essentials is all you had money for. And those things you had to be very careful if you budgeted your money very carefully. And it got to pennies, what was important. And our entertainment was mostly reading and things like that. Went to the library. Movies were cheap. And we walked everywhere. I never rode into town. We always walked all the way into town. And that's where all the action was. I walked to school every day, 2 miles away, rain or shine, and we got along, but it was times when I'm sure that I didn't know what the story was because my father didn't burden me with his problems on paying the bills. He had one employee in the store. And even though the wages were small, it was hard for him to meet the payroll for her. the bank decided that the loan that had been taken out by my grandfather against the store building and the real estate, the mortgage was past due on the payments. And so the bank had started some foreclosure action, but they published a notice of it out of town without giving any notice to my father. And a friend from out of town found it in their paper and called it to my father's attention. And we believe that one of the local bankers in the bank where the mortgage was going to buy the property for a very minimal payment, and my family would be out of business without any chance to reply. So my father went to Cleveland and talked to the judge up there, who was a relative. His name was Judge Joy Seth Hurd, and he was in federal court. And he was well acquainted with the law, and he told my father of some recent legislation which permitted him to get a delay on making the payments so that the property would not be sold out from under him. And so my father took advantage of that, and with much struggling and penny pinching, he was able to get out of the situation, but it took a good number of years. And when he died in 1966, there is still a mortgage on the property.
Interesting. So you recall the Depression as hard times, but it seems the idea I'm getting is that it was not as hard in your family as other families, but it was still difficult. What did you do for dates during the Depression, since you had to save your
dates?
Money?
Well, my father always had a car, but it was always an old car and had a lot of mileage on it. But he'd always give me the use of the car when I needed the car. And I could go pick up a date in that, but I didn't date very much because I didn't have any money. And I didn't belong to the country club group on the east side of town. I lived on the west side of town. In fact, we had a football team that played Sandlot football. And we called them the West Side Tigers, and we called the East Side guys the East End Sissies. We played football in Perkins Park on every Saturday after the high school game on the prior Friday night. And we frequently had the varsity players in the Harding High School football team play with us down there on Saturday morning. Nobody had any equipment. Some of us had scrounged some old used football shoes, but we had no other protection equipment, no helmet or anything. We played straight all out football, tackling and blocking. It was a lot of fun. We got beat up pretty good. We had all kinds of bruises, and I had some cuts on my head where guys' feet had kicked me and broken the skin, and they bled pretty good. But it was a lot of fun.
What else did you do for fun besides football? Any other games?
Games? Well, one of my friends had a set of golf clubs. They were wooden shafts, and his family had lost their money, and he wanted to get rid of them because he wasn't going to play golf, and I hadn't played any golf. But he said he'd sell them to me for a buck, the whole set of clubs and golf bag and everything. So I dug up a dollar and bought the set of clubs. And then I would occasionally play nine holes of golf with a friend of mine. And we usually had beat up golf balls with lots of cuts on them and everything. But we had a lot of fun. And I wasn't particularly good. I wasn't able to make the high school golf team, which was a bunch of good players.
From the west side?
Those players came from all over town. A lot of them were from the north end, with a bunch of tough guys, too. And the west side had been filled up with ethnic groups. Italians and the Polish and some Negroes and some Middle European country people. And the north end was mostly a Slovak type, and they had tough football teams. Played them, man, they're tough.
Did you see any extreme poverty in Warren, such as people just in pure rags that lived in something that resembled a Hooverville?
No, I don't remember people being in rags. We had to stretch our shoes a lot longer than they could have been used, and when I went to high school, until I got out and got a job, I didn't have very many clothes to wear, but my mother always kept them up and sewed them and kept them going for me, so I wasn't in too bad a shape. I didn't have any money to take girls out and spend money on them. Most of the dates were like going to the dances of the Highway Club and the Friendship Club and the Junior Prom and the Senior Prom. And I'd go to the YMCA, where I had free use of the facilities because I was a certain age. Did a lot of swimming, played handball, shot pool. And we'd go camping. In fact, a lot of camping on our farm at that time, where we live now. And it was charged 25 cents a carload for people who came, and they'd have picnics and corn roasts and swimming in the swimming hole down on Eagle Creek, back of our present house. And in fact, my dad called it Moore's Park. And we had a hired man who collected the money and entertained the people who came by playing his guitar and calling square dances, which they would do out in the field.
So you didn't live on the farm during the Depression?
No, I didn't live here, but I stayed here and camped all summer long most of the time. Went fishing and swimming all day, and we lived in tents.
Approximately how far away was the farm from where you lived in the city?
About 8 miles.
8 miles. And you walked?
No. My dad had dropped me off, and he'd come out a week later and see if I needed anything, canned goods or something to eat. And we had a lot of sweet corn and vegetables out here on the farm that I could eat. And made sandwiches. Drank milk from the barn.
From the barn?
Mm-hmm. We had a dairy barn out here at the time.
And it was popular among the residents of Warren to come camping on the farm?
This was a very popular place for them. I see people today that I know used to come out and camp when I was a kid, and they were kids, or they came out with their parents. And one of them I saw Sunday, who married a cousin of mine who would camp out here. Her parents would camp out here. And they had their courtship out here. They got married and had their honeymoon here on the farm, camping. And she went on to become a nurse and a school teacher. And she taught Indians in Alaska. Way back on the Yukon River, so far back in, the only way they could get there was by float plane or ski plane. And her husband, my cousin, who is one quarter Indian, was a great hunter and fisher, and he spent all of his time hunting and fishing up there in Canada, or I mean in Alaska. And the hunting was great, best he ever knew. Fishing was great on the Yukon River too.
What were the holidays like during the Depression?
Holidays? Well, Memorial Day was pretty nice the way I wish it was today. There was always a big parade. And the veterans of World War I, the Civil War, and the Spanish-American War would march. Now the Civil War veterans and later the Spanish-American War veterans would ride in cars because they were not able to march anymore, but the World War I veterans were marching. They had a lot of bands, and everybody went to cemetery and decorated the graves and paid tribute to those who had died. It was very nice.
What about?
That was Memorial Day. 4th of July, we shot a lot of fireworks off. My dad sold fireworks in the store. And frequently he'd have some left over every year. And so a week after 4th of July, we'd have a big shoot off of fireworks up there at the farm afterwards. And that was always a lot of fun. There was Roman candles and rockets and all kinds of firecrackers, cherry bombs, and 2-inchers we called them. Those were pretty loud firecrackers. And it was a lot of fun. Christmas, well, before the Depression, I got a lot of things for Christmas. Oh, it was great. But when the Depression came on, I was a little older too. Gifts were not as frequent or as big, and I'd go to my grandmother's house, and she had 7 grandchildren, and I was the oldest, so I got $1 for my Christmas present, and the rest of the kids got a 50-cent piece, but I got $1 because I was the oldest. These were hung on her little Christmas tree that she put on the library table in the living room. That was in Niles, Ohio. Thanksgiving, we had that usually at either our house or my aunt's house in Niles. We always had turkey. New Year's Day was nothing. It was just another day. But Memorial Day is also a day of the Indianapolis car races. And we had radio, and I'd listen to the Indianapolis 500 race on the radio every year, and I was really interested in that.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the radio? Did you grow up with it?
When I was in third grade, my first experience with the radio was at my grandparents' house, and they had a battery-operated radio set. And I can remember hearing the inauguration of President Harding in the early 1920s. And that was, I believe, the first inauguration that was broadcast. And I always listened to station KDKA out of Pittsburgh. And the reception was pretty bad with a lot of static, and the sound was distorted. But if you listened carefully, you could hear what they were saying. And I had a little radio set that was on. One that had a piece of a stone in it that was, had some magnetic quality. I can't think of the name of it now. And we had a thing called a wire hair that we rubbed on it. It was called a crystal set. That was in it. And I could get about two stations on it, but the sound was unbelievably bad, and it was surprising that you could get anything using that as a source of a radio wave. And that didn't last very long. From that we went to big battery powered set with a big loudspeaker on it. And we could hear baseball games, things like that.
Do you recall ever hearing any of FDR's fireside chats on the radio?
When FDR was president, I was in high school. And I don't remember. I did hear some of them, but what they were, I don't recall. I do remember listening to some football games on television, or on the radio, and also there was music and some singers who died a few years ago were active at that time. And Roosevelt was president, and he came in 1932, and I was 15 years old. So I was in high school while he was president, and then he was president while I went to college. But I couldn't get to college until 2 years after my graduation from high school because I didn't have any money. And it took me 10 months to find a job after I graduated from high school. I did find a job in a steel fabricating plant that manufactured washing machine tubs and steel sinks. And those appliances were covered with porcelain in the factory. I worked for the Youngstown Press Steel Company, which later became Mullins Manufacturing Company, and later manufactured what was called the Youngstown Kitchens, which were metal kitchen cabinets and sinks. Washing machine tubs went to quite a few plants to be installed in washing machines. Those are round tubs. And I worked in the pickling plant. The pickling plant is where you used sulfuric acid, which was called muriatic acid as a commercial name. And we also used caustic soda to remove impurities from the tubs. washing machine tubs to remove the impurities from the metal in order to put the porcelain on to the steel and have it stick. There could be no grease or oil or anything, and the tubs had come out of big presses which were covered with a lubricant, so we had to dump these tubs in baths of sulfuric acid. Well, the tanks in which the sulfuric acid was put was heated by steam pipes, and the air was filled with steam, and the air I was breathing was made up of sulfuric acid and water. And not less than every 60 days I had to go to the dentist and get my teeth cleaned because they were covered with black substance from the sulfuric acid that was in the air. Caustic soda was just about as bad as sulfuric acid. And I was a helper there. I loaded the baskets into which the tubs were placed to go into the acid tank. And a crane operator ran the crane to put the tubs into the bath of sulfuric acid. After he took them out of the sulfuric acid, put them into a drain tank of water, and then into a neutralizer bath. All this stuff was going up in the air in steam, and I coughed a lot, my eyes got red. And in one case, another fellow and I were bringing in a carboy of acid, which weighed about 110 pounds, and we had to put it on top of, on the edge of the tank in order to dump it into the acid tank. And when we set the carboy down, there was no plug in the top of the bottle. A carboy is a bottle with a short neck on it. And the acid slopped out of there and went up in my face, got in my eye, and I had sulfuric acid burning in my eye. And luckily the crane operator was smart enough to know what to do, and he grabbed a hold of my arm, took me over to the tank, turned on the hose, full pressure, and then turned that water hose up to my eye and washed the acid out. Best thing he could have done. It seemed terrible at the time to have that water pressure on my eye. And then I was escorted down to the plant hospital, which had one nurse in the little room down there. And they used some neutralizer in my eye to neutralize the acid and sent me home. And the next day I came to work with a patch on my eye. I had a patch on there for about 2 days. Took it off and I was all right. But luckily the man had put the hose on my eye to wash it out. Now they told me later on that there was some goggles there that I was supposed to wear, but nobody had ever told me about them. I'd worked there for many months by that time. Nobody used them. Mm-hmm. Today they would have been forced to use them to put the goggles on.
What other jobs did you work before you went off to college?
When they first opened the municipal swimming pool in Warren on Mahoning Avenue at Packard Park, I got a job there, and on opening day I was working in the locker room. And I would take the, people would take off their clothes and put their clothes in a basket and put on their bathing suit. And I would take the basket and put it over on shelves. They had a little number which they carried with them and gave to me when they got out of the swimming pool, and I gave them their basket back. So I was there on opening day and I spent the summer doing that job. I didn't get very much. It may have been $3 or $4 a day, And when I worked at the Youngstown Press Steel, I got 37 and a half cents an hour. And we were on a 6-hour shift because there was so many people out of work that they put us on 4 shifts a day of 6 hours each to spread out the what work there was. And nobody complained, but we didn't make very much money when we were working 6 hours a day.
Can you tell me a little bit about college?
Yeah. I had saved up some money. In fact, I saved all my money while I was working until I started college for about a year and a half at 37 and a half cents an hour. And I started college with some friends of mine, and I decided we'd all go and sign up. There were 3 of us, 4 of us, and went there and signed up for first semester, first quarter, I should say. And our quarterly fees were, if I remember right, it was either $20 or $25. And that was, took me for 3 months. And bought books, I bought secondhand books. We rented a room. My room rent was $10 a month. And we rented rooms in houses where the people who lived in the house just rented us rooms there, and they had maybe 10 students in the house that they rented rooms for. And I spent the first year using up my savings. The next year I went back, and in the meantime I had got a summer job back at the Youngstown Press Steel and worked the same old place where I'd worked before. And I was always on night turn all the time I worked there. The pay had gone from 37 and a half cents an hour to 42 and a half cents an hour because the place had been unionized by the CIO. But being a temporary employee, I was not a member of the union because the union didn't care for some temporary employee whether he was on there or not. And, so I got out of paying union duty. And then when I went to school that year, I got a job. In fact, I forgot to mention that during my first year in college, 3 of us went into a little business for ourselves. And we made signs to place in the store windows around the campus that they could put a poster up in there that said, "Beat Illinois" or "Beat Michigan." And we made a new one for each game. And the people would let us put up the sign in their place. In fact, they'd pay us 50 cents or a dollar for the sign each time. And then we would split the profits between the 3 of us. 2 of us were on sales and 1 guy was on production. And he was pretty smart. He knew how to do silk screening, and so we made good production runs. But the trick was to go out and sell them and deliver them, which took a lot of time when you're going to college. And then later I got jobs. I waited table for a couple of years in a restaurant on the campus. I spent 1 night working for the faculty club in their dining room. I didn't like that. They put me on bussing dishes. I didn't like the attitude of the faculty who treated me like some peon. And so I worked 1 night there and I walked out on that job. I didn't understand that. I much preferred working in the public restroom. And then in my senior year, being a lousy typist, but a typist, I got a job for the restaurant, typing the menus each day. So I could type those menus in about an hour and a half, making carbon copies for everybody. And instead of working 3 hours a day for a dollar's worth of food in the restaurant, I worked an hour and a half for that dollar's worth of food, which is pretty good. And then they put me on a half an hour during the lunch hour in the restaurant in addition to that, so I had to work 2 hours for it. The typing was a lot better than the waiting table. But I had to work lunch and evening every time for the meals. And I also signed up for ROTC, which paid me 25 cents a day. I belonged to the ROTC. And from my 25 cents a day, I had to buy a uniform and books and so on. But I always bought used books all the time. They sold them in Long's bookstore on campus. The summers, I worked for Youngstown Press Steel until my senior year, when I worked, I had to go to ROTC summer camp for about 6 weeks at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and they paid me, it was $75 to do that in 6 weeks. But another guy and I hitchhiked to Miami, Florida, right direct from Fort Knox, Kentucky, where we were in ROTC camp. We hitchhiked to Miami, and we spent probably 5 days on the beach at Miami Beach. But everything was so cheap. We got a room in the hotel right there on the beach for a dollar a day. And West Kentucky, and I hitchhiked to from Fort Knox, Kentucky to Miami Beach. I had $50 in my pocket. And we hitchhiked there, stayed about 5 days on the beach, then hitchhiked back. And when I got as far as Columbus, I bought a bus ticket. I had enough money left out of that $50 to buy a bus ticket from Columbus to home. So that's how we scrounged. And while I was at college, I hitchhiked home all the time. When I got home, like for a holiday, my parents would take me out to Ellsworth or maybe beyond Ellsworth, sometimes as far as Worcester, to go back to college. And I would get out of their car and then go out and stand on the highway with my suitcase and hitchhike the rest of the way to college. But in those days, you were pretty safe on the road. It's not like today. I wouldn't dream of doing it under today's situation.
So you were going to college during the Depression, and you put yourself through college. Did you see any of the government programs available to college students, such as the CCC or WPA?
Well, those weren't for college students. Those were for young men and for young workers. I had some friends that worked for the 3Cs and some who worked for the WPA. I kind of looked down on the people who worked for WPA. That was like being on relief or welfare to do that. And you had to be destitute to be accepted. 3Cs did a great job, and I think the people learned a lot. But Mostly they learned self-reliance and hard work. They didn't learn to trade by doing that. And I didn't get any government help at all. I just worked in the economy. But I did in my senior year, I was put out on accounting field work because that was my major. And the accounting department had a certain number of openings during the tax season for students. And I was sent to Detroit and worked for a CPA firm in Detroit for 3 months instead of my winter quarter. I started on January 1st and worked until the end of March in Detroit. I was on the home office audit of the General Motors Corporation. And of course I was new to public accounting. All I'd had was college work. But I enjoyed it, and I was amazed at the size of the thing. General Motors owned the whole building, which covered a whole block of General Motors building, which is still in existence in Detroit. And I worked there for $100 a month and lived in the YMCA in downtown Detroit, rode the bus out to work every morning. And I had a lot of rather nominal jobs to do in accounting, but I did them, such as bank reconciliations and that sort of thing. But I remember doing some bank accounts for the General Motors bank funds, where they had transfer accounts, and I would look at checks for $2 million, $3 million, and I couldn't believe it when I looked at a check for that amount. What they were transfers from one bank to another, the various companies of General Motors. I helped in the consolidation of the accounts there at the end of the year, fiscal year, and I can remember reserves being set up at that time for the value of the facilities of General Motors in countries that had just been overrun by the Germans. Belgium, Holland, France. And so they would have a valuation set up on their balance sheet for those subsidiaries, but there was always a reserve and a pull amount to take them off of the books, so they're shown as no value. Because they were occupied by the Germans, what good were they to General Motors? And what was the future of them? Well, we knew it at that time. And I worked for the Ohio State Fair in Columbus. Being in ROTC, they hired us for $5 a day for 12 hours a week. And we were auxiliary police to the State Highway Patrol. We wore our ROTC uniform with an armband that said we were State Fair Police, and we patrolled the grounds of the State Fair and worked in the parking lots and at the gates. And it was very interesting. We worked two shifts. One would be the night shift, the other would be the day shift, and 12 hours from 7 to 7 each time. We had to pay for all our food and everything else. Slept back on the campus. We had to walk 15 blocks to get back to the campus. After we finished work, we get up in the morning, you have to walk 15 miles to get there, or 15 blocks, I should say, to get there at 7 o'clock in the morning. So it was kind of fun, but we really didn't make any money.
Was there a point when you saw that things were going to lighten up in the Depression, where you saw the so-called light at the end of the tunnel?
No. When I was back for my last quarter of college. I borrowed money that I didn't have. I borrowed from the alumni fund, which loaned me $150, $200, something like that, to get past the next quarter. And maybe it was $300. When I graduated, within 3 months, I'd paid that back to the alumni. I couldn't wait to get it all paid back, but I got it, paid it back. They didn't charge any interest.
Was there anything about the Depression that just really sticks out in your mind? Anything that when you think of the Depression, you instantly think of that?
Yes, I can remember applying for a job at Republic Steel. I had to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning and walk up to the window of the personnel office, which was out on the parking lot there, and apply for a job, and the personnel manager there said, are you a tool and die maker? I said, no. He said, that's all we have jobs for right now. Of course, he knew that I was a tool and die maker. I was 18 years old. And that's just his way of getting me, telling me there was no job. And there weren't any jobs either. I was lucky to find that job at Youngstown Press Steel and be able to work 6 hours a day.
Do you feel that you're fortunate, too, because you went to college?
Fortunate? Well, yes. I'm probably very fortunate because after I'd worked for Haskins and Sells in Detroit, they offered me a job in New York, in the New York downtown financial district office, in the report department. But I had to write them that I was not able to accept it, because I was going on active duty 2 days after I graduated from college. I didn't even go home from college. I went right straight to Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Did they ever tell you that the job would be waiting for you when you got back?
No, because they didn't tell me that, and I didn't know what to do at that point. It wasn't important. But I was gone for just about 5 years at that point. And what good is a promise of 5 years ago to have a job back that you were going to do when you immediately graduated from college?
True. Well, can you think of anything else about the Depression that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I can remember a lot of people who were on welfare. And everybody skipped along, but everybody treated everybody else good. There was no pushing of other people for being first in line for things. And I did not mention, I should have mentioned, that in between my sophomore and junior year, I got a job by passing a test. I got a job with the Ohio State Employment Service to be a clerk on the day they opened up the unemployment compensation system in Ohio. And I wrote the second claim for unemployment benefits in Cumberland County. The first claim was written by a friend of mine, and I wrote the second one. He got all the publicity in the paper, which is all right. I didn't need that.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore, for your interview.
Thank you for talking with me.